You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are going once back to the movies, and we are going to review Bohemian Rhapsody, a film that we all were looking forward to watching and talking all about since we were all Queen fans. And this is basically the story of Freddie Mercury from his beginnings working at Heathrow Airport as a baggage unloader until his days at Live Aid in front of millions and billions of people. It was pretty amazing. And it was just a great movie to, you know, for us to talk about since we recently talked about Queen in our music spotlight. So pretty awesome stuff. And speaking of awesome stuff, let me introduce my co-host for this week, the man, the myth, the legend, who they're going to be making a buyout on soon enough, Mr. Howdy himself, Mike Gordon.
Howdy. God, that day will be a scary one. So I can't imagine. I guess it'll be the Howdy story.
Exactly. How the Howdy was built.
Yeah, that would be very strange. But yes, you're right. We have been looking forward to anticipating this movie in various forms. And this serves as a nice sort of follow-up to our Queen episode that we did a couple months ago on the band itself. So this will talk all about the movie. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about the what really happened with the band and all of that as well. So I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
It should be very interesting to see and what everyone's thoughts are. We got a great crew to talk all about it, and we want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Definitely tell us what you thought about Bohemian Rhapsody, what you guys, you know, think of the portrayals of the characters, or what you thought of the teeth. It's pretty darn awesome. So it should be kind of cool to hear what people at home think. Of course, we want to take a second out to thank everyone who's been donating to our Patreon. We've gotten some, you know, really great people up there, some very loyal followers, but we need more. You know, I'm not beyond begging. And for as little as 25 cents a week, you know, that's nothing, folks. You know, that's a dollar a month. You can help support the ESO Network. And you could get really cool bonus material that we're putting out there. We're going to have, you know, a lot of different things going on in the coming months with the holidays coming up. And, you know, we got still stuff to post from Dragon Con. So we definitely have stuff for our bonus listeners. And, you know, stuff here on the ESO Network is always going to be free. That's never going to be a question. It just is questioning, you know, what, you know, we can do for extra bonus stuff for you guys. If you, you know, don't help donate to the Patreon, which is patreon.com/ESO Network. Your help can help us. And, you know, we do appreciate the generosity of everyone out there so far. And, you know, thank you very much to everybody. We do appreciate it. We might not say it enough, but we do appreciate it. And if you don't feel like doing the Patreon, we also have the Amazon link. You can go now onto the ESO website, which is esopodcast.com. And on the side navigation, there's ads for our TeePublic store, for our Amazon store. You know, with the holidays coming up, it's great places to do shopping for your holidays. You know, everyone, you know, think of ESO when you need to do it. And, you know, why not just chop to your heart's delight. All right, let's get started. And we got lots of rants and raves to go to this week. Mr. Mike, what do you got for us?
Well, you know, speaking of our Patreon page and some of the exclusive material that we've got going on there, one of the things that Ashley Pauls, who our listeners are very familiar with, of course, because she joins us usually for our movie episodes. She was not able to join us for this one. But she and I have been recording a series of audio discussions based on her blog series called Better Late Than Never, in which she tackles movies on her quote-unquote movie bucket list. Now, there's a lot of movies, of course, that she hasn't seen. So she's going outside of her wheelhouse to see some of these movies. She has never seen a Hitchcock movie, for example. So she saw North by Northwest. So we discussed that. She had never seen or wasn't really big into Westerns. And recently she saw The Good, Bad, and the Ugly. And of course, she has never seen Big Lebowski, which is the one that you had mentioned that she should see, which kind of got her inspired to do this whole series. So I do encourage people who, you know, who want to listen to those, at least read her blog posts that she's been posting reviewing these movies. But yes, for added material, please join us on the Patreon, and only for, you know, a few dollars, you can listen to all the ones we've recorded and then some, all the ones that are coming out. So we really appreciate that. But I was thinking, Mike, since you inspired Ashley to tackle or to finally watch some or review some movies on her movie bucket list, I'm kind of interested in turning the tables on you, sir. And I'm wondering, there must be movies out there. And I know for me, there are movies out there that for one reason or another, you just haven't got a chance to see. And there are people that are like, I can't believe you've never seen that movie before. And you're just like, I just, you know, either lack of interest or lack of time, or in some cases there'll be movies where you just hear so much about them that you're kind of like, you know what? I don't want to see this movie because it seems like everybody in the world is telling me to see this movie. Certainly I had that feeling towards Titanic for a long time. Seemed like everybody and their sister was telling me to see Titanic. I had to see Titanic. And it took me years before I finally saw that movie. But with everything else going on with movies coming out, you know, still, and as well as television being as big a deal, it's kind of hard to go back. And I mean, not physically, because a lot of things are streaming, but to make time to go back and watch classic movies or movies that, like I said, have a reputation that for some reason or another. So I'm kind of curious, are there movies out there that you can think of that you haven't seen that people would be surprised by, that you're like, yep, it's like, believe it or not, I've never seen that movie?
That's a good question. I have to think about that for a while because I try to see pretty much whatever comes out, you know, that's in genre or things like that. But here's one that a series that I've never watched, and you might be surprised by. I've never seen any of the Fast and the Furious movies.
Wow. Okay. I've seen the first two, and then I tapped out, and I kind of want to go back and get caught up. But you know, obviously, there's like 9 of them now, or something insane. So it's like, ooh, that's a lot of viewing. And plus, you know, I don't know if they're all really readily available that you can just like watch one or another. Like, you know, I think you'd have to like watch one on Amazon or maybe rent one at Redbox, or I don't know. Or you'd have to buy the DVDs, of course. Or
mm-hmm, exactly. But
so,
yeah.
So you've never seen any of them, not even first one.
Nope. Never seen any of them.
That qualifies.
Yeah. I just didn't have any kind of interest when they first came out. And I've heard that they do get better even as the series went on. And they just didn't interest me at the time. And then I felt like, oh, I don't want to have to go back and start with number one and, you know, have to watch the whole series.
I think, you know, when, you know, certainly since we've been doing the podcast, I mean, I don't want to say that we don't pretend that we're experts at this, but yet you and I, throughout our history and our love for movies, have seen a lot of movies. And I think it's fair to say that both of us are quote unquote movie guys. So it's very difficult, like, for some people to comprehend when they're talking to you about a movie that you haven't seen. They're like, I can't believe you've never seen that. I know that I used to get that. I still do get that with movies like, one that comes to mind is Dirty Dancing. Like, I've never seen Dirty Dancing. And
really?
Yeah. See? And yet people are like, I can't like believe you've never seen that. And I've never seen it. I've never sat down and watched it. I didn't go to the theater to see it. I've never seen it. So it's just one that's, and I don't know if I ever will. It's not one that I feel compelled to see. I mean, at some point maybe, but you know, there's just always something else that seems to be more attractive to me to see. But, I certainly think that, now I will say that Ashley is trying to see movies that she wants to see, but she, she's not seeing movies just because people are telling her you need to see these. These are actually movies that she is kind of curious about. So, I don't know if that really applies to, like, if I was doing a movie bucket list, I don't know if that really applies to, like, Dirty Dancing, because even though I know a lot of people have seen it, it was a big movie and everything like that, and it's a classic, and I still manage to get references like, nobody puts baby in a corner and all that kind of stuff, but, I don't know if I don't feel compelled to see it, you know what I mean?
No, of course. And, here's another one that I've never seen, and people are actually really surprised when I say it. I've never seen Sid and Nancy.
Wow, that's a good one. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a good one. Mm-hmm. That's speaking of like sort of biopics, rock and roll biopics. That's
mm-hmm. It ties into tonight.
Yeah, it really does. And Gary Oldman is, I think he's in that, right? Yeah, he plays
Sid. Oh, yeah, he plays Sid Vicious.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. I would love to rewatch it again at some point because it's been – I don't think I've seen it since I didn't see it in the theater, but I saw it closely when it was released on video, I think. And, it's a pretty good movie.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty darn awesome.
Not a happy movie though.
No, another movie that I've never seen, but I rectified it on Halloween. Actually, it's a movie I had always wanted William to watch with me. And I decided I was going to finally get around to watching it was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
I noticed that you saw that at Halloween. I was very interested in that choice because you didn't seem like an Abbott and Costello kind of guy to me. And I was like, wow, where did that come from?
I like a lot of the old, 1920s, 1930s comedy because my grandfather, I just never got around to watching many of the Abbott and Costello. I've seen Laurel and Hardy. I've seen the Three Stooges. I've seen the Marx Brothers. Love all those. But for some reason, Abbott and Costello just were almost skipped over. And I always decided, it has, Frankenstein, Dracula, and the Wolfman in it. And it was just, it's the ultimate team up. And it was just like, it would have been, I bought it years ago to watch with William. It was still in the wrapper. And I said, heck with it. I'm going to watch it. And Judy and I started watching it on Halloween. And it was just a ton of fun.
That's good. That's awesome. That's one of the reasons why, I mentioned it before, but one of the things I do during October is try to get caught up on a lot of classic horror movies that I've never seen before that people are like, they recommend. And one of the ones I saw early on in October was The House on Haunted Hill, the original with Vincent Price. And I had heard from a lot of people that that was one that I should see. And that one lived up to the hype. And that's the other thing. It's like when a lot of people tell you you should see something, that carries some expectations with it. So a lot of times they don't hold up. But this one was one of the best Vincent Price movies I've seen. And I've seen quite a few of those. And to finish it up on Halloween, the night of Halloween, I was watching something that I had never seen before, which was Bad Monster Party.
Really?
Yeah, I'd never seen the Rankin Bass Bad Monster Party special before. And so I watched that for the first time ever on Halloween. And that one, I will say that one to me, gonna probably make some people angry, did not live up to the hype as much as I was hoping for. I didn't think that the musical, numbers were strong compared to some of the other Rankin Bass specials that I've seen. And I thought the animation was great. I thought the monsters were great. The plot was kind of the one main guy who was not a monster, who was Frankenstein's descendant, the voice that they used for him was a knockoff Jimmy Stewart voice, which just didn't really sit with me very, like, it just, I didn't work for me. So I found it kind of long and you know, I'm not a huge Phyllis Diller fan either. And she's in it a lot, like a lot more than I would have. I thought she was going to be in it for like a scene or two, but she's in it a little bit more than that. And, yeah, it just didn't, it didn't ring for me. I mean, I understand its appeal, and I'm certainly not, you know, I don't mean to, certainly offend anybody who really loves it, because I know a lot of people really, really love it a lot. And there's a lot to love. I get it. But it didn't connect with me as much as I hope.
Well, I could totally understand that. And it's always interesting because something that you've built up in your mind, I've got to watch this. Everyone's been recommending it to me. And then when you watch it, and it's like, that's it?
Yeah, you're kind of like, oh, that was okay. You know, that was, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's difficult. And there are still some movies that I would like to see. I mean, there's still, I would like to see all of Spielberg's movies. And I think right now I'm missing, one or two of them that I haven't seen. Likewise, I have not seen all the Pixar movies, including some really brilliant ones that I'm ashamed to say that I've never seen WALL-E.
Really?
Yeah, I've never just got a chance to sit down and watch WALL-E. I've never seen Ratatouille. I've seen most of Brave, but I haven't seen all of it. There's a few others. There's about six Pixar movies that I haven't seen. So those would be on my sort of movie bucket list. If I could just sit down and just watch movies, and get caught up on those, you know, from a very early on, I saw, all of Hitchcock's that there was to see, and I've seen almost everything he's done multiple times. But some of the other great directors like Scorsese and Spielberg and all that, I haven't seen all their movies.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think I've seen most of Spielberg's stuff. I'm trying to think, you know, there's certain directors, you know, movies I haven't seen that, you know, are classics and, you know, but, you know, I have a rest of my lifetime to see those and everything. So there is stuff, you know, you'd be surprised by, and, you know, we'll find that out in future episodes, I guess.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's great about, you know, recording these is that every once in a while we can pull out one of those and be like, hey, you know, I haven't seen that. You know, one of the things that we're doing with Earth Station Who that I like so much is that, you know, eventually I will have seen everything that there is to see from Doctor Who. So that's cool. Like, you know, that would be hard for me to sort of make an appointment to try to see all that stuff. But because of the podcast, we get a chance to do that. And I, you know, some for better or for worse, because some of them are not as good as I would like. But some of them are kind of tough to take. You know, eventually, at some point, we will be watching that Trial of the Time Lord. I know it. So eventually that'll happen. But so it's good to kind of to have the show that kind of gives us a sort of a reason to sort of say, hey, let's cover that. Let's rewatch that, rewatch something that normally I wouldn't have made time for, or to see something for the first time that, you know, I know that the next time we have Darren on, we're going to be watching a few musicals that I haven't got the chance to see. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen Cabaret all the way. So that's going to be fun to view and talk about.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with that, because it's probably been 20, 25 years since I've seen Cabaret.
Yeah, it's getting to the point now where a lot of the times when I'm looking at movies that are classics or whatever, it's now like decades since I've seen them. And that's, it's like, yeah, I've seen them, but boy, I really can't remember them that well. So that's the sign of, like you said, we've got time, but then again, you know, it's, we might be past the halfway point. You know what I'm saying?
Speak for yourself, my friend.
I will.
So. Exactly. I'm at the quarter point.
The quarter point. All right. Yes. Well, you know, the way modern medicine is going, maybe. I hope that's true.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And, you know, as I like to say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I have all the reasons to be strong now.
But it's very different, you know, talking to Ashley, you know, when she's talking about better late than never, I'm like, you're so young. Like, this is like better late. I mean, like, the never for you is such a different thing that it is. It means something different for you than it does for me, you know?
Oh, completely. Mm-hmm, exactly. So, and it's just interesting to see when you get, you know, someone who's so young, because she's, you know, in her 20s, early 30s, and, you know, you get that, you know, oh, I haven't seen that, or how he'd love to tease her when she's on the movie reviews that she was, like, not even alive when the first Jurassic Park came out. And, you know, it just makes us feel really old. I was done with college by then, you know. So
I have to give her a lot of credit, though, and I do appreciate it, you know, because so many times I, you know, talk to younger people and they don't really care about like looking back at this stuff or finding any relevance in it or looking at watching the classics, they'd rather see the remake or whatever. And it's like, you know, I mean, there's some really, really, really powerful movies that and works of art, but movies in particular, we're talking about here, that still work. I mean, they're still effective even all these years later. I mean, they're just, some of them might seem just as more relevant now than they did then, you know, mm-hmm. Like, you know, the way that the things are going. So,
well, exactly. And you know, it's some of the interesting things is like when I talk to Judy and she's never seen quite a few different movies. When I showed her North by Northwest, she had never seen it before.
Yeah, Michelle's never seen it. I was talking to her about it the other day. I'm like, have you ever seen that one? And she's like, nope. And I'm like, wow. I mean, I've taken her to see, she's not a huge movie person though. So, I mean, she's never seen some of my favorite movies. I mean, she's never seen Raiders of the Lost Ark. I know, right? Like, how are we together? Like, how is that even possible? Exactly. But you know, I mean, I took her to the theater a few years ago to see Jaws for the first time. She had never seen that.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's just all relative, but you know, it's a fun thing to kind of think about. And it, you know, any excuse to revisit the classics or to look at them, you know, with new eyes is kind of a fun opportunity. So I appreciate this series that I'm doing with Ashley, and I must admit it's kind of cool to kind of, it's got me thinking a little bit more about like going back and trying to see some of the movies that are on my bucket list.
Oh, of course, and you know, I've got a ton of them. Still, you know, or movies that, you know, there's some Martin Scorsese stuff that I want to show Judy that she's never seen. You know, just there's just tons of different movies that have so much good going in it. And it's just like, sweetie, you got to watch these and, you know, type of thing. It's almost like how I used to want to always like educate William on movies. Now I feel like, you know, Henry Higgins and Eliza Doolittle for My Fair Lady, you know, trying to teach her about culture and movies and stuff. So, you know.
Well, I can only hope that people get that reference.
Oh, one only hopes, you know, Ashley, My Fair Lady is a movie about, you know, yeah. Watch the movie, you'll find out. But yeah, there's definitely some cool stuff out there that people, you know, should watch. And, you know, everyone has stuff, you know, you'd be surprised at some of the things I've never watched. And if you ask me, why didn't you watch these? I just go, I don't know, you know, that type of thing. Cause it's true. I just don't know why I never did. You know, I've never watched, and you're going to be really shocked. This is what I'm going to close it with for me. I have never watched any of the Ash movies.
Oh, the Evil Dead movies?
Yeah.
Wow.
I have never watched a single one of those.
That is amazing.
Uh-huh. See? So I've never seen, you know, Evil Dead, any of those. And so it's just, they look fun and they look pretty cool, but I'm not the biggest horror movie fan. You know that.
That's true.
So, you know, it was just like, and you know, if when I was younger, it was just like, do I want to waste my time watching, you know, a scary movie like that? I'm like, no. But I know tons of people, including yourself, who love that type of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a huge horror movie per se, but I do enjoy me the Evil Dead Ash movie. So.
Mm-hmm. I know. And there's plenty of folks I know that do. So just interesting stuff.
Absolutely. So, well, very cool. Well, definitely, you know, I don't know if it's something that I'm sure that once we do these series of four, that I know that she's already looking at doing adding others. So this will be something that's ongoing as far as Ashley. You know, I mean, certainly if there's a movie that we've mentioned that, you know, you guys are out there that listening are like, hey, I can't believe you just said that you haven't seen this. You know, and if there's something that you want us to cover, maybe we'll do it. Maybe we'll take an episode on the schedule and be like, hey, this is a movie that neither one of us have seen. Let's see what all the fuss is about, you know, because that might be a fun thing to do.
Well, that's one of the great things about working with another person. You have somebody else there to compliment, you know, and pick up the slack where you haven't seen certain things.
Yeah. I think finding a movie that neither one of us have seen would be a challenge.
I completely agree.
That we should see.
Yes.
That would be a classic. You know, that would be, yeah. If a listener can come up with a recommendation of a movie that Mike and I should see, like a classic movie, not just some obscure thing, that we should see, maybe we will take that under advisement and do something about it on a future Rant and Rave.
Exactly. You never know, we might find out something.
I know that Jerry Chandler's listening to this and he's making a list of about like 100 that we probably should see, that he's going to be like, I can't believe you guys need to see these. So Jerry, I know that you're listening and you're going to have a huge list for us, but that's why I wanted to qualify as saying that these have to be, you know, classic movies that have like a reputation rather than some obscure, you know, movies. Cause Jerry can go pretty obscure.
Why? Yes, he can. And you know, we have many listeners to do that, but please, we want to hear from you. Write us earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. We've got some holiday movies starting to trickle into theaters, and one of the first of these is an animated retelling of The Grinch. Now, I don't know if you've seen some of the previews or not, but I'm a little bit skeptical about this one personally. I think that the original Grinch is an animated Christmas classic, and to me it's aged really well, so I don't know that they necessarily need a whole new retelling of this story, but it is what it is, and Hollywood's going to do remakes, so that's coming out in theaters this weekend. We also have a movie called Overlord, which I saw a preview for earlier this year and wasn't quite sure what to think of it. It's billing itself as a World War II / zombie thriller, which is kind of interesting, and is about a group of American paratroopers who land in Nazi-occupied France for a special mission on the eve of D-Day, and they end up encountering a mysterious lab with some researchers who are up to no good. Probably has something to do with that zombie business. This one's actually getting some good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, so might be worth checking out. It looks like it might be a little too scary and intense for me, but the previews looked interesting enough that I might actually end up renting it so I can watch it at home with all the lights on. Finally, in theaters, we have The Girl in the Spider's Web, which is about fictional hacker Lisbeth Salander. Now, you might have heard about this character before. She's appeared in several different films and has been played by various actresses. So it's kind of interesting that they're doing yet another new version of the character. I haven't heard a lot of buzz about this one, but it'll be interesting to see how it performs in theaters. Then on DVD this week, we have two family films, which are The Incredibles 2 and Christopher Robin. We actually talked about both these movies on ESO earlier this year. I thought they were both fun movies. I liked Christopher Robin a little bit more. I thought it was a fun, heartwarming movie that talked about the importance of rediscovering your childhood and not forgetting about your family. I really enjoyed it and would highly recommend it. The Incredibles 2 was fun as well. I didn't think it was quite as fresh or inventive as the original, but again, still a fun movie and worth checking out if you were a fan of the first one. And that's it for movies this week. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content, I am continuing my Better Late Than Never blog series over on the ESO website. I'm taking a look at a number of classic or popular films that I just hadn't got around to seeing yet. And so far, I've looked at Jaws, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. And I'm looking forward to digging into several more. So be sure to go on over and check that out.
This is Mandy from CasterQuest, and we're inviting you to join us as we explore Patrick Rothfuss's best-selling fantasy series, The Kingkiller Chronicle. You can find CasterQuest at CasterQuest.com, on SoundCloud, on Apple Podcasts, or at our podcast network at ESOPodcast.com.
Research and Chandrian, Ambrose Jack is dumb, Alodin, Dennis on a date. Master Kilvin, old ass man, a selling lamps to folks in Imre, Will and Sim and Diox, Danchen, Tabalin the Great.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide. No escape from reality.
I enjoyed the show.
I also write songs.
Our lead singer just quit.
Then you'll need someone new.
I love the way you move on stage. The whole room belongs to you. Don't you see what you could be?
No one will play us on the radio.
We need to get experimental.
Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Do it again.
One more.
How many more Galileos do you want?
Roger, there's only room in this band for one hysterical queen.
Let me go.
Mark these words. No one will play Queen.
Fortune favors the bold.
Freddie, concerning your private life.
What more do you need to know?
I make music.
I want to give the audience a song that they can perform.
What's the lyric?
Sing.
Ready, Freddy?
Let's do it.
We are the champions, my friend.
You need to slow down, Fred.
I just need a bit of time.
But if I don't have time?
We are the champions. We are the champions. No time for losing, 'cause we are the champions.
You're a legend, Fred.
We're all legends.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Earth Station 1. Now we are going off to the movies and it's time for our review of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes, this is a long-awaited movie that has been, it's been a very bumpy ride to get it made and a lot to talk about here with this one. So, and we've got a great crew to talk all about it. Starting with our iconic rock segment person herself, Michelle Berg is joining us.
Hi.
Howdy. How's it going?
Good.
This was a big one for you, I know.
This is big.
So I can't wait to hear your thoughts on this as well. And we've got our movie guy, Alex, is with us.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Glad that you could join us. And Darren Noel is here, too.
I'm just going down the list, so I'm the token gay. Okay, I get it.
Well,
we have music, we have movies, and then there's the gay.
It's amazing.
I love it.
It's amazing how we all work together as one.
I prefer fabulously gay.
I'm fabulously gay. Absolutely fabulous, darling. Absolutely. Yes.
Yes. Well, yes.
And together we just make perfection, of course.
As I mentioned, this movie, I think it was originally announced almost a decade ago. I think so 2010, I think it was officially announced. Although there were rumblings, it's gone through a number of different casts, directors, writers, et cetera, et cetera. There was everything about this movie that during the production that led you to believe, ooh, this might not be a worthy endeavor. So by the time it got to the screen, a lot of people, and I was, you know, pleasantly surprised as they released the first trailer, I think I saw earlier this year. The buzz on this movie was electric. I couldn't believe how many people were really looking forward to this movie and wanted to see Queen and in particular Freddie Mercury on the big screen. So a lot of expectations here. I'm interested to see overall what you guys were expecting and whether or not it lived up to it. So we'll start with you, Michelle, because you're the biggest Queen fan I know. I mean, you really are. Like, I mean, you've been to Queen conventions. Like, so, like, that's hardcore. So I know that this is something that, first of all, did you ever think you'd see Queen on the big screen like this?
No, I didn't. And the first announcements, I was like, no, I don't need this. All the rumors about half the film being about Queen post Freddie, and I just thought, I am not up for this. But that trailer, that first trailer, won me over. And yeah, been very excited ever since.
Yeah. And so, after seeing it, is the end result overview thumbs up, thumbs down?
I would say overall, as a Queen experience, thumbs up. As a movie, I give it a B. As an experience, I give it an A+. And Rami Malek's performance, I give, I'm like the teacher in A Christmas Story, A++++.
Excellent. Darren, what about you?
Well, you know, this was going to be fraught with all kinds of complications for me and my people, obviously, because of Freddie's complications. It was well done. I have to confess, I don't know that much about Queen from a biography standpoint. So a lot of this was revelatory to me. So
you still, after this movie, Darren, you still don't.
Yeah. See, that's what I thought, because I felt like, and the movie was good, you know, for a biography pick, which was what this was. It was good. A reconstruction of events from certain viewpoints that I felt like some people here are saints and they probably weren't. And some people are just horrible, and they probably were partly horrible, but not all the way horrible. I felt like the villains that were cast, I think that there was a lot of overly villainy stuff going on with that. Rami Malek, I think if he doesn't get an Academy Award nomination, he will be robbed, because I think that he did what Meryl Streep does, which was disappear behind the real person, which is hard for an actor or an actress to do because they do so much publicity. You see them and go, oh, that's that guy. And he's playing a part, like the Tom Cruise syndrome. You never see the characters. You just see Tom Cruise with a different name in a movie. But with this movie, I felt like they managed to get the gay parts down without being explicit about it. And I know that ticked off a whole bunch of people that I know. And I felt like, well, you're shooting for a mainstream audience, so you can't really be that explicit about it. And looking at it from that lens, I also felt like there wasn't any obviously explicit straight sex in it either. So they kind of put everything on the same playing field for that. It was obvious to anyone watching it what was going on with Freddie and his different liaisons. They just weren't as explicit as people wanted. It wasn't HBO After Dark, you know, it wasn't that. And I think that was very respectful, because I think they had to go that way with it. I think once you go too far into the gay world for a straight audience, it becomes territory that makes people very uncomfortable, and they just won't like the movie no matter what it is. But I felt like that this was a pretty decent movie. I felt it was very rousing. The scene between him and his dad at the end was perfect. Whether that ever happened or not, I don't know. but that was a little gay fantasy there. You want that reconciliation with your parents, you know, right there. I felt the way they dealt with the topic of AIDS, especially in that time period, was very well done. But yeah, I think it was a pretty decent movie. It was definitely a drama, definitely not a musical, even though it's got music in it. It was not diegetic. It was all, you know, they're singing their songs in the movie, but it has nothing, you know, forefronty to do with the plot, even though the background, yeah, there's a lot of symbolism going on. So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And how can you go wrong?
I know,
Queen,
right?
Is a soundtrack, you know?
I was upset that you omitted Flash Gordon. I didn't hear Flash once. I was like, aw. I was kind of sad, yeah, but you know what?
We'll talk about, yeah. Well, I'll mention that later.
I was like, where's the cameo from Sam Jones? Where is he?
Screw everything else.
Where's
about
Flash?
This movie. Where's Flash?
Flash? Where's Christopher Lambert really with a sword walking through just the background?
Could it have been that difficult? Could it have been that difficult for Remy to wear a Flash Gordon t-shirt at least one scene? Anyway.
Yes.
Alex, what about you? What were your expectations going in?
Having heard all the rumors, having heard all the stories, the backstory, and I think I may be one of only three people in this country who is actually very, very interested in seeing Sacha Baron Cohen in the Freddie Mercury role. Because I just thought, when I heard that casting, I was like, oh, nobody's more perfect for this role. I knew Rami Malek from things like the last Twilight movie, Don't Judge Me, My Wife Took Me, and Night at the Museum. Okay, judge me. So I knew his work, and he's a good actor. He's a fine actor, and so I was like, okay, he kind of has the look. I guess I could see it. And then you get to see the first trailer. And the first trailer is solid. It really, you know, brings it in. And, you know, like Darren said, that they didn't really – there was a very delicate balance that they were having to do with this film. I think by now most of you have already heard about the issue at the Texas Theater during the first showing, in which about 40 minutes into the film – apparently somebody stood up, walked out and said, I didn't buy a ticket for no Brokeback Mountain 2. and I'm like, it's a Queen movie.
What? Yeah, exactly. Like, what did you think?
Well,
like,
we're going into
it. Did you not? Yeah. Are you not aware of Freddie Mercury?
What's Texas?
What Texas. Surprising, like,
yeah
I know.
And we're shocked how
I'm surprised they played there
because they love We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions. So
of course they do.
Of course
it's the same thing when I go to a wedding reception and all the grandmas stand up and do the YMCA. I'm like, y'all know that's about gay sex, right?
Because if you can't get a hookup at the YMCA, then you join the Navy. Yes,
I'm just making an observation. Y'all know that's.
anyway, back to the Queen movie.
You can hang out with the guys in the Navy. Oh, sorry. What are you talking about?
Seeing the film, I saw it Sunday night. I saw it late Sunday night. And I had already gotten to see all the reviews. And it was very interesting because all the reviews seemed to lean towards the negative. And all of the personal reviews, friends of mine who had seen it, all loved it. So I'm like, okay, so somewhere in here is the truth. Mm-hmm. And I sat there and I could feel the emotion. I could feel it starting off. That very first scene, Freddie sits up and coughs. And my mind went to, oh, hell, he's already got it. Mm-hmm. This is how we're starting the movie. And I was entranced in this. I was on board with this film. I immediately said, this movie, I am going to enjoy. And then I saw Mike Myers' name on the credits. And I went, they did not do stunt casting on this film. And I was wrong. I agree with what was said. If you're like the music, this is all the musical scenes are phenomenal. 90% of the acting is phenomenal. The guy, was it Tony? Is it Gillum who plays Brian May? Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Loved him.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I thought. Yeah.
I mean, when I looked at him, my first thought was, are they just de-aging Brian? How are they doing? A lot of CGI. Well, it's a Bryan Singer film.
A lot of CGI.
Well, 3 weeks short of being a Bryan Singer film.
Yeah.
So I literally was like, oh, okay, he's terrific. Rami Malek, half the time when I saw him, I saw Freddie Mercury. The other half, I saw a very awkward Rami Malek with a bad tooth implant. A very bad prosthetic. And
a bad prosthetic.
Then I saw the appearance of Thin Fat Bastard. And both scenes involving Mike Myers took me out of the film. But there's a lot of good in the film. And I'd like to focus on that and less on the Mike Myers.
Yeah, sure.
Yep,
sure.
Of course.
I want to hear what Mike thinks first.
Okay. Sit back.
I'm going to be here a while.
Got to listen. Down. Yeah. I walked out of the theater thinking that was a lot of fun. That was very emotional in parts. It was a great work of fiction. And I enjoyed the story. But, you know, we did an episode on Queen, what, about 8 months ago or so?
No, it was only about 2 months ago.
Yeah. Really? Okay. Yeah, well, time flies. No, it was.
Yeah. I should point out, it's a good listen, I think, too, especially for people who are not as familiar with the band. But also, one of the things I noticed when we talked about Queen in that episode was we didn't focus entirely on Freddie. In fact, I almost, and one of our listeners actually commented, like, wow, you didn't really spend a lot of time talking about Freddie. And we were talking about the band as a whole and mentioning here and there, but we didn't spotlight Freddie per se. And you know, that's what this movie's for. So,
well, exactly. This is
going to get a chance to do that now.
This story is literally A Star Is Born. You know, this is the Freddie Mercury story. And, you know, just happens to be that he was part of Queen in this. And I enjoyed it. I thought Robbie was really good. I think the teeth should get Best Supporting Actor nomination right away. You know, I think in a lot of ways I walked out of, like, Judy was looking at me and was like, did you not enjoy it? I said, no, I did enjoy it. But it felt like this could have easily been a movie of the week also. And it just had that kind of feel to it. The cheese, the, you know, like something you would see on ABC on Sunday night in the 70s.
Yes.
And it.
But with like
exactly.
A tenth of the budget.
Exactly. And
it would take place on the Love Boat.
Well, exactly. But it had that kind of feel to it. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed, you know, I love how, you know, they cut between scenes and the eras and how the looks changed. And, you know, it was just, it was awesome. And, you know, seeing some, the actors they had playing the members of Queen, I thought they got spot on. I thought that was awesome, including the hairdos. Great. You know,
there was a lot of good wig work in this movie.
Oh, very much so. But it was, there was just something about it that kind of left me flat. The one scene, though, that got me was the Live Aid scene. That blew me away. And it was almost the full performance, scene by scene, movement by movement. And I was talking to a friend of mine earlier in the day, and we both had seen the movie over the weekend, and both of us had said, did you watch the YouTube video of the Live Aid performance? I said, of course I did. And if you look at it, they captured it right down to the T. And I was impressed. And just the camera work on it, just the scenes, it was breathtaking. That alone made the movie for me.
Yeah, I believe what I've read is that they did film a reenactment of the set, the entire set, and that'll be an extra on the Blu-ray DVD release, is that you'll be able to watch the entire Live Aid set as recreated by the folks.
They actually did have 2,000 people in there for the performance, and then CGI took care of the rest.
Oh, but did it, man. I don't think I've ever seen Wembley look bigger. I mean, it was just like, I was like, is it really that long? Like, I was like, it just looked like three, you know.
But they didn't even film in Wembley. They filmed at an Air Force base.
No, yeah. I mean, CGI's.
And that was the first scene shot in production. Mm. That's how they had to start, was that recreation.
They started from there. All right, so I was waiting for this. I've been a Queen fan most of my life as well. Love the music, love the band. I was worried about the production as well. I don't know if I was as sold on Sacha Baron Cohen as a lot of people were, but I certainly was interested. But I got to say, I think Rami like does as good as you can do without – I mean – Let's face it. Freddie Mercury was a once in a lifetime like entity. Like like the fact that anybody can come as close as Rami did to recreating him is just like worthy of, as you mentioned, all the nominations, if not all the awards. Because there were times where I did forget that it was an actor playing Freddie. I thought, this is Freddie. Like, this is, and not just in the performance scenes, although those were, I think, all recreated very well. Those are the highlights for me, the performance, not just the Live Aid, but some of the other shows they recreated, the live performances I thought were great. Daytime. The other highlights for me were the studio work, getting to see sort of behind the scenes of how Bohemian Rhapsody was made. Another one, Bites the Dust, We Will Rock You. Those were kind of fun. I did like those a lot. The story itself about Freddie and his life, that was a little bit by the numbers. I do appreciate Darren. I do appreciate the fact that even though they didn't make it really explicit, I think they went out of their way to not put any sort of blame on the lifestyle.
Oh yeah,
like. I thought they did a really good job. Like they made a point when he confronted Mary to say like, it's not even your fault that this is happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's a conversation a lot of, what do you call it? And it's unfair to bisexuals who stay bisexual to say that bisexual is just a train stop on the way to Gaydom or Gayville or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Gaytown.
Woohoo. Gaytown.
It's one of those things where it's like, oh, you've had this realization. Remember, this was during the Great Sexual Awakening, you know, after the wild and crazy disco era of the 70s. But no one realized that there'd be that price to pay at the end of it.
Yeah, and this, yeah, I mean, back then, when Freddie says, I have it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone that's knew what it saying, was. There was, you didn't have to talk about it.
Right, and that was a sign of death.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it was an automatic.
That was like that was a one way street.
He was lucky he survived long enough, as he did.
Oh yeah, you know, right. And yes, the logistics of all of the facts, like you know, Freddie didn't really tell them before. I don't even know if he knew before. Like,
no, he didn't find out till 87.
Yeah, but he knew. Do you know what I mean? Speaking as someone in the community. Yeah. You know when someone's body is not in keel anymore. Do you know what I mean?
But I mean, the band didn't know. Like, so there's a lot of like, you know, the time wise and whether or not it happened the way that it happened, as far as a lot of like they did composite a lot of characters together. But I like the fact that they didn't, you know, they didn't say, oh, because he was gay, that's why he died. Like they didn't act like that was like punishment.
It's interesting that you came away with that, because going online and seeing things on Twitter, I'm seeing a lot of rage out there. I'm seeing a lot of people saying this movie slut shamed him. This movie depicts homosexuality as it's bad. It's a gateway to taking drugs. See, he took drugs because he was gay. And me personally, I'm not really understanding why they're coming away with this.
I think someone's taking their own baggage on that, because I don't think the movie does that.
Well, I mean, you take drugs and you drink because you have money to take drugs and drink. And you're a rock and roll star, so slut shame Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix while you're at it.
What movie about a rock star doesn't have sex and drugs in it, right?
So thank you. I mean, go watch The Doors and come back and talk to me about that.
I'm wondering if a lot of these people that are so angry is because it's a holdover from that first trailer in which it was not made front and center clear, and there were shots of Mary Austin in there, and everybody, they're whitewashing it.
Well, there were calls of they're straight washing it. You know, because they didn't know how big her part was going to be and how explicit the gay part was going to be. And we've seen this story before. A superstar gets famous, gets the wrong people around them, and gets, you know, walked down the wrong path.
He heard the wrong advice. Yep.
Yeah. Totally.
It's a common trope. Even the movie Walk Hard even made fun of it with all the different drugs he takes, because his manager constantly says, this drug will do this, 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 this. I suggest you don't take it. And next thing you know, the main character is addicted to it.
Hell, look at Judy Garland. We've talked about her before on the show.
Yeah. I mean,
she was doing pills back when she was Wizard of Oz because she was too fat.
Well, she could lose a few. No, she looked amazing. Yeah, she did.
Well, she did eventually. She died.
I think the movie though does a pretty good job at maintaining a balance. And it's not like the Disney story of Queen. I did point out to Michelle after we saw it, I do feel like I watched them, like this was an adaptation of the Scholastic book version biography.
This was definitely a Cliff Notes version,
of the biography. Yeah,
yeah. This is not a, like, you know, hard look at Freddie's life or even a part of it. This is, I believe, the band's official, like, this is how we want the legend of Freddie to be. This is like with like the legend of Robin Hood, or the legend of, like, this is the legend of Freddie as in relation to the band Queen. And you know, for what that is, you know, that's it's not a bad thing. I don't think is it truthful? Maybe not. You know, obviously in some areas it's not at all, but I don't think it's malicious.
No, it's just a point of view of the story from the people who are alive, right? So they get to tell the story.
Yeah, I guess the phrase history is written by the
way. Yeah, because Brian and Roger were consultants, and they've been part of this from the beginning. I don't know exactly how much sway they've had, whether something happened or didn't happen, but I have to imagine that most of the things that happened in this movie happened because of them, their say-so. You know?
I have to imagine if they wanted to use the music, they would have to get them to sign off on it.
Details, come on.
Yeah.
There's that.
Well, yes, they, yeah. Yes, there was. There's that. And to that point, I was kind of surprised, too, that despite his visual performance, we never hear Remy sing. Like, all of the music is Freddie. Like, all of the vocals in this are Freddie. Like, I thought that was kind of, I don't want to say, I just was a little disappointed, because I was hoping that Rami would at least get a little bit of leeway, but I don't know how he sings personally. So I understand that, you know, that not many people can sing like Freddie. So to put that on him on top of everything else would be kind of tough, But I'm kind of surprised that he didn't get at least one song where he had a go at it, you know?
To be fair, not all of the singing was Freddie. Some of it was an artist by the name of Mark Martel, who is actually a lead singer of a very prominent Queen cover band known as the Queen Extravaganza.
I love it.
Gotcha.
Yes.
The Queen Extravaganza was put together by Roger.
I did not see them in the credits at all when I was looking at the list. Sorry, I mean that went right by me because I was paying attention.
I was waiting for the end credits scene.
No.
Yeah.
Totally. Oh, where he joins the Avengers?
I figured Thanos would show up. Something would happen. I don't know.
You know what though? If Thanos showed up, he'd go, you know what, we're keeping Freddy
just turns to dust.
Keeping Freddy. Yeah.
Still too soon.
Yeah, way too soon.
You know what's funny to me is that some of the more outrageous stories of Freddy are not in the film. And it occurs to me that the reason why they're not in the film is because there's so much of this movie that feels like a biopic cliche bingo card that if you had the sequence in which they record the song "The Show Must Go On," nobody would believe it. Because Freddie walked in completely hampered 100%. His body's deteriorating. Brian looks at him and says, "We don't have to record because clearly you aren't up to it." Freddie drinks a bottle of vodka, sits it down and says, "Let's do this."
Yeah.
Records it in one take. And you can't do that scene in this movie without somebody sitting there going, "Oh, now they're just making crap up."
Right. I mean, you do get a little bit of that, obviously, when they're rehearsing.
Oh, there's a lot of it.
When they're rehearsing for Live Aid, you know, his vocals aren't there. So, you know, there's that mention that his vocals aren't there. But obviously, when he's in front of the crowd, he's Freddie.
He's on. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Adrenaline does some amazing things,
so,
doesn't it?
Yeah. It's a safe movie. You know, it's almost like they didn't. They didn't want to take – they didn't want to take the risks. They didn't want to – you know, and maybe they – by doing that, maybe they felt like they were wanted to be too respectful.
They wanted a PG-13 rating.
They did.
Specifically because they wanted young people to be able to see this. They wanted young people to be able to see Freddy, be inspired by Freddy, and –
because I think one of the things,
which means you had to sanitize the sex and the drugs. You saw the aftermath, not and the beginnings of it. You didn't see the during, you know. So
right, because I think that was one of the creative differences that Sasha left over, because he wanted to have more of an adult type movie, a more mature audiences movie, to for whatever story he wanted to tell. I mean, obviously there was a story that he wanted to tell that was not the story
that
Queen wanted to tell. So, and you know, it's fair. I think, you know, I think it doesn't harm the movie. It just doesn't make it, you know, as stylized and maybe as amazing as it could have been. It's competently directed by Bryan Singer. And of course, Bryan Singer brings his own baggage to this.
More baggage than Samsonite.
But he, you know, I, you know, obviously, whatever you think of the man, I, you know, he's competent as a director. I think the scenes that are supposed to move you. He's great working with actors, and I think that's all apparent in this movie as well. And even though he left, you know, towards the end, I mean, most of it is his, you know, I mean, he's the one that gets the credit. And I think, you know, probably rightly so, because I think it's basically his vision, for lack of a better word.
No, it's a good way to put it. And, you know, despite the controversy, despite, you know, people protesting and complaining and such, it came in number one this week. I'm impressed.
It opened number one in every market.
What else premiered this week, though?
You had actually The Nutcracker and The Four Realms, which was a big release for Disney. And Nobody's Fool, which was the Tyler Perry movie that's his 20th. And the fact is Tyler Perry's movies release on weekends when they know it can be number one.
Yeah.
And Bohemian Rhapsody domestically did almost 200% over what Nutcracker did. It did 51 million to Nutcracker's 20 million.
See, if I was Disney, I would have waited till Thanksgiving weekend for Nutcracker.
Well, they can't wait until Thanksgiving weekend for Nutcracker. They have Wreck-It Ralph to breaks the internet.
Oh, that's right.
So they had to release this one now.
Yeah.
So they really didn't have a choice. Yeah,
the mouse did it to themselves.
With themselves.
Well, it was actually very smart counter programming because you could easily sit there and say, I don't want my 8-year-old to see Freddie Mercury.
Mm, true.
So we'll send them to the Nutcracker, and my 13-year-old and I can go see how all this amazing music was made.
I wish my parents took me. I wish I saw Freddie when I was 8 years old.
I would. That's the thing that I grew up, at the time of when albums like Night at the Opera were being released, and to be able to say that I got the chance to see Freddie and to see Queen at the peak of their reign, as it were, would have been amazing. And I can't imagine the number of times this weekend that their Live Aid performance was watched on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard so many people, like, either before or after seeing this movie, they went right to YouTube and or got out there, because we have it on disc, so yeah. We're good. No YouTube necessary for us.
One thing that's kind of funny in that the chronology and a lot of the historical details are just wrong. There are so many things that they got painstakingly right that fans will see and appreciate. The wallpaper in Freddie's apartment, I can tell you, was right.
The cats.
The cats. They created a separate Red Special guitar replica for each era of the film that mirrored the modifications and condition of the guitar at that time.
And they're really playing, right? Or they're really like Brian showed.
Yeah. Yeah. They're playing, and the cast was very proud that none of them needed a hand double for their playing sequences. There's a scene with Freddie's party, his big party where he's wearing the crown and they've all overrun his house, and he comes through and he slaps this girl on the rump that's on a bicycle, and she's her little cap and her little bikini, her blonde hair. She is an exact reproduction of the Fat Bottom Girl's 45 mm-hmm. sleeve. If you're a fan, you remember that sleeve. All these little things, that the costume. Sometimes they had them in the wrong era, but they were painstakingly recreated. So as a fan and you see these things, they are just an absolute delight. And then at the same time, you're like, that didn't happen then.
You're like, what?
Freddie didn't have a mustache when they recorded We Will Rock You. What?
They actually got the correct number of Pepsi cups on top of the piano. For Live Aid and the one beer.
Well, they knew they had to do that because they knew people were going to be out there checking. I mean, that's something that's verifiable. If you have footage, make it look that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I was in a theater listening to Doing All Right and the lyrics to Sweet Lady. I was just like, oh my God.
I can't believe I was in a theater when the stomping started. Mm-hmm. We Will Rock You, and the theater
that's
started
awesome.
Doing it.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
I was like, oh, they're into it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We had a dud crowd, Mike. They were so cool.
Yeah, our crowd was lifeless too. And did not help. Again when freaking Mike Myers showed up.
That didn't bother me. As a matter of fact, I thought Mike was fine. I will say this, and I don't know if I would have recognized him if I hadn't seen his name. But I know that this probably, you know, irked the hell out of you, Alex, but I really loved it. I got it. I was tickled when he said, you know, no one is going to bang their head to this song on the radio in their
and
car.
That line felt so ham-fisted. Yeah.
It was, but I loved it. Just like the, you know, just like the objects are closer they appear in Jurassic Park, that, I don't know. I was tickled by it. I
was tickled by it, although the rest of the dialogue in that scene I thought was
it was very forced in some points.
Yeah.
I really felt like the whole thing of him in there what was forced, and the only thing that we got out of it was out of that scene really was learning of the origin of Miami Beach.
True.
which was wonderful, and I love that.
Is it possible that the guys in Queen were like, "Yeah, this guy was a real prick to us. Let's somewhere in the script make him a prick." And they're like, "Oh, we know how to do this." The writers go, and they're like,
"I don't even think he's a real character."
Mike Myers' character is a composer.
Yeah. Is he? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So obviously they had some angst, but
some angst towards the record label, maybe.
Yeah.
that they filtered out through this dude that they threw a rock at through the window.
And again, you have that same moment where, okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to go around and give this version that they're not going to release as a single and tell people to play it anyway. It got released as a single. It was the number one song in November of 1977 or 1976.
That's because Kenny Everett played it on BBC and forced their hand.
Yeah, but it was like they made it sound like, okay, you're not going to release it, mm-hmm. So we're gonna let this one person play it.
The gayest DJ
later on it'll become later became something. But we never saw the record label relent and say, okay, we'll release it. And honestly, if this movie has done anything for me, it really makes me want to revisit I'm in Love with My Car.
What exactly are you doing to the car?
It's great. Yeah, because it's great because I actually travel back to that at the party. Because now it's just like a running gag.
It's an auto-sexual.
I thought that was a nice moment. Yeah,
there's a lot of, I mean, there's the, you know, the band breakup scene, the band getting together scene, you know, getting back together and all that kind of stuff. Like, there is all of that, the band going against the radio, the record label and rebelling and all that. I mean, you know, I really think, though, that, you know, I was trying to think of, you know, Queen stories that I'd heard over the years that I thought, you know, should be in this movie. And to be honest, you know, that's the thing. I mean, this outside of Freddie, like the other guys were kind of, I mean, Roger was kind of over the top. He could be, but the other two guys were pretty boring and just kind of were there for the music and the experience, but they weren't really like big. It wasn't like a big rockin' party band.
No.
That had like wild, wild stories. I mean, they were just like, you know, basically four English blokes that made really, really amazing music. So, I mean, in some ways,
would you have wanted to see though, Mike, the story of Brian May getting his doctorate and becoming an astrophysicist? No.
Well, this is going to be like, this is going to be a franchise movie. So they're going to break out and do like four movies and spotlight each one of the members of Queen.
I want you to stop now.
Because everything's a franchise these days, right?
Yeah, you do four individual movies, and then you do the one big movie.
The next one will be Rush, followed by ELO. Yeah, followed by.
And then you have the giant concert.
Well, how many?
You know, I love Brian. I will be the one person in America.
Well, you have the Elton John movie coming out.
Okay, so how many people in front of this movie saw the trailer for Rocket Man?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
I did not.
Perfect marketing opportunity, right? I mean, if you like gay British rockers, like stay tuned
because we got this coming.
Another one.
And
although that one looks a lot more stylized.
Oh yeah, that one looks a lot more drug fueled.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure you go with the tagline. You haven't seen gay until. I'm not exactly sure that's the way you want to go with it, but I'm as interested in seeing Rocket Man as I really, really kind of hope, though, that towards the end of the Rocket Man movie, they show him filming Kingsman.
I just hope they actually put Shatner in a rocket.
Because then the actor would be playing opposite himself?
Yes, exactly.
I see, right. So...
I see what you did there.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. I was like, you know, when I'm like, who is that playing? I'm like, oh, that's somebody I would.
It's Eggsy.
I would never have thought of him in that role.
Oh, so, yeah. We're counting on the days before Eggy comes over to our side. It's just a matter of time at this point.
Well, you know, when you see somebody like Oldman play Winston Churchill to such a degree that he loses him, like, there's nothing that's impossible for actors nowadays.
That's true.
They can use prosthetics and CG to just make them be whoever they need to
chameleons.
Be.
Chameleons.
I think Gary Oldman's next role is he's actually going to play Daniel Day-Lewis. Ooh. And that will be fascinating.
Is he going to paint with his foot?
Probably, because he's a method actor.
But then you're wondering, is it Daniel Day-Lewis playing Gary Oldman?
Playing Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh, it's going to like,
would be unbelievably meta.
It's like Russian nesting dolls of casting.
If we can get back to the movie Queen real quick. Although now I want to talk to Darren weekly. Anyway,
this is so sudden. What will your wife say?
One of the issues with this film, obviously, is that it's a very balanced film. And there are some issues with I hate to use the phrase, the bad guys.
Oh, totally. There were tons of issues
in the film. Yeah. And you just kind of, it really, they became the walking cliches.
Yes.
Yep.
Of the film.
Very one note.
Yeah. Yeah.
The little queer boy from Belfast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Catholic.
Yeah.
From mm-hmm. Belfast. Who obviously is like, I think you should tell him about this great deal that we're getting out of CBS right. Records. And I didn't know anything about this. And it's like,
it was nice to see Littlefinger get, you know, double crossed again, though. Let's be honest.
Oh yeah, of course.
Game of Thrones. Yeah. For the,
and where stands yeah, when
Game
you
of
needed
Thrones
her
for the win, but still
yeah. Game of Thrones versus Downton Abbey there.
Yep.
So a little bit of both there. That was, that's pretty cool. Yes, we've meandered, we've delved into it, so I think we're just going to leave it. I'm going to go around, and I guess we'll rate it, stars or crowns or whatever.
Crowns.
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 Crowns, okay. Michelle, how many crowns would you give Bohemian Rhapsody?
I have to divide it up.
It's not an easy one.
As a movie, I recognize it's. I'll be generous and give it 3 crowns.
Okay.
As I said earlier, as an experience, it's definitely 4.
Yeah, we will own this movie here at this house, and yes, it will be played on the Blu-ray player. that I have no doubt. Darren, what about you?
What's the scale? 1 to 5 or 1 to 4? What's
1 to 5?
1 to 5.
1 to 5.
I give it a 3.5. Just because it was definitely the PG-13 version of this story. And I would have liked to have seen more reality than the musical fantasy of it. But I get why they made it this way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Alex?
I agree with Darren. I would have liked to have seen more of the musical fantasy. I think if you're not going to be historically accurate, you should go as wild as you possibly can on it. Especially with a character like Freddie Mercury, because you literally could tell the true story along with the overly fictionalized story, and you could not tell which was which. The musical performances in this, the Live Aid scene alone is a 5-star moment, and had me crying because it's just so good. The movie is a 3-star, is a 3-crown film.
Mike?
For me, probably I'll give 4 crowns. I'll be with everybody else. It was overall like a 3-crown movie, 3.5, but the Live Aid scene pushed it up for me. You know, I remember this is the year after I graduated from high school, watching Live Aid on TV and being glued to the screen for the whole day. And Queen was one of the ones I remember vividly to this day. And they captured it amazingly well.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I'm gonna echo what you said. I mean, yeah, what everybody's basically said is that as a movie, it's 3, 3.5, but there are moments which are definitely worth 5. So split the difference, you get a nice solid 4, I think, for me out of that too. The recreation of the Live Aid performances and some of the other performances as well, but particularly the Live Aid performances, is done in no less skillfully than, say, Nolan doing Dunkirk, or, you know, Spielberg at the battle before at the beginning of Saving Private Ryan. It's just that intense and that good. You know, I mean, obviously they're different in terms of their emotion, but as far as skilled filmmakers bringing these historic moments to life, and that Live Aid performance is, I think, one of the best single performances of a group of musicians that's ever been made. Like that, like as with all the other acts that were on that day, on both coasts or around the world, even Queen won that battle of the bands, and it's probably one of their best performances that I've ever seen. And we've seen there's a lot of concerts that's available on Blu-ray and other formats of Queen, which I definitely recommend people should check out. But that 20 minutes that they had, they had the crowd and the world in the palm of their hand.
It's amazing what you can do when, you know, you don't have a tomorrow, probably, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know really if the band knew, like, or if even Freddie knew. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever know if he knew then. But I mean, he just had that ability. He really did. Whether it was in Rio or New York or London or you know, wherever, they played to huge audiences, and it didn't matter. The larger the audience, the bigger it seemed like they were as a band. And I thought this movie, you know, really captured that really well, which is not easy to do. And I will support Rami Malek as for an Oscar. I will. Until I see another performance that's as compelling, I definitely support that as well. So, well, thank you.
And remember, Teeth for Best Supporting Actor.
Teeth, right.
I just got to say, as a fan, and I'll probably the biggest fan here at this moment.
Yeah.
I mean, this is my band for more than 40 years. And if young people, if older people remember and younger people find out more about Freddie and people take time to learn about this amazing, magnificent, wonderful sport of nature that Freddie Mercury was, that's wonderful to me.
Yeah, well put. All right. Well, on that note, that concludes this segment. Thanks, everybody. And we'll be right back with the ESO Network. Con.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela. And this week, this geek girl is talking about the chilling adventures of Sabrina. So I was thrilled when I heard about the Riverdale series being made. Like, I really like Archie. I grew up reading the comics, and so I was like, okay, cool. We're going to get, like, a teen drama show. But I was super, super, super excited when I heard that Sabrina was being made into a new show as well. I've been keeping up with the new Chilling Adventures of Sabrina and the Archie in the Afterlife comics, and I love the concept of them. And I was a huge fan of the original Sabrina since it came on when I was a kid. So I was super, super excited to see how they adapted this show from the new comic. This show was really, really fun. They made some changes from the original TV series with Melissa Joan Hart, of course, because that was more of a comedy, and this is supposed to be a little bit more, not so much, but it does have comedy in it. Salem doesn't talk, but I really like that decision. We have her cousin, who has kind of become the Salem character with all of his commentary. So you still get that witty commentary in the show. I also really love all the new characters that were not in the original series, all of Sabrina's friends, all of that stuff. And I love how catty her aunts are. Like, it really, really gives them so much depth. We get a few Archie references in the show. Sabrina has an Archie thermos. They mentioned Riverdale a few times. So it will be cool to see if they're going to actually connect both series. So we may get crossovers in the future. We may not. But I really hope we do. It's a 10-episode Netflix series, and the ending will shock you. I am super thrilled for a second season, and I really, really can't wait to see what happens in the storyline, because there are so many questions by the end of the season that you will just have, and you really, really need closure. So I am super excited for a second season. And Michelle Gomez is flipping amazing in this show. I was so excited when I found out that she was in the show. So yeah, guys, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey, everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Network Con Report.
Well, there's only one event that we've got on our schedule for the rest of the year. 2018 is almost over. Only 2 months left. Less than 2 months. Can you believe it?
Where is all the time gone?
Really? We've had a lot of fun doing a lot of conventions this year, and it boils down to just one more appearance slated for December 16th, and that is at the Atlanta Comic Convention. It's a one-day show. It is at the Marriott Century Center, and Mike and I will be there, not in any official capacity. We won't have a table or anything, but we will be milling about, and a lot of friends of the station will be there. I believe the award-winning friend of the show, Bobby Nash, will be in attendance, as well as a lot of other guests that we've had on the show. It's a fun show. It's a one-day. It's good to hang out. It's got a good vibe to it. There's a lot of talented people and a lot of good good deals in the bargain bins as far as trades and even those pesky Funko Pop figures that Mike likes so much.
Yes, of course. You know, there's always another one over the horizon, which I didn't know about, that just comes out.
Yeah, that's right. So that is December 16th. So mark your calendars for that. If you are intending to be there and you want to say howdy to us, like I said, since we don't have a table, give us a shout out. Let us know you're going to be there, and we will be making a point to meet up with you and say howdy, because we enjoyed doing listening to or meeting our listeners. And interacting with them. So, on that note too, we are still working on our 2019 schedule. So we've got some dates already pegged. There's a lot of, openings in our calendar. So, it's never too early to start planning for next year's con season. So, if you'd like us to help participate or promote one of your shows, or if there's a show that happened in 2018 that we didn't cover and you want to let everybody know for 2019 that this is a good show that they need to put on their radar, please reach out to us, because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us for this movie review. It's a lot of fun talking about Bohemian Rhapsody, and, you know, can't wait for the sequel. I think it's going to be awesome.
I think that's going to be even more depressing.
What, the Adam Lambert story? Come on.
Stop it. Stop it.
You know he's in the movie.
Adam is in the movie.
Yes, I know.
He has a cameo, so look for that. No cameo for Paul Rogers.
Oh. Let's, before we get too crazy, let's thank everyone for being here. Michelle, thank you so much, as always.
My pleasure, as always.
Anything you want to shout out about real quick? Your blog?
Well, iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com. At the moment, I've got my thoughts about this film posted up, and shortly I'm going to put up encounters with Hall of Famers that I have seen live.
That's awesome.
Including Queen.
Including Queen.
Cool.
I'm hugging Brian May.
Wow. Even better. Even better.
And Mike, you do know that the entire band is being released as Funko Pop figures, right?
Yep. Posted it tonight on the ESO Network Facebook page. So it's very cool. Yes. Of course, I'm going to have to get both versions of Freddy.
There's three. Yep.
I saw the mustache version.
The straight version, the bi version, and the gay version.
He's in a leotard in one of them.
There you go.
Still no Flash. I'm waiting for the Flash variant.
Dun, 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 dun. I walked out of the movie theater going, God, I wonder if Mike Gordon was disappointed that they didn't sing Flash.
The answer is yes.
I was like, what? No Flash represented at all?
I just wanted Christopher Lambert to walk through the background at Live Aid with a sword. I don't know what the
movie doesn't get a two from me.
David Bowie's pompadour wasn't enough.
All right, of course, Darren, thank you as always.
Oh, you're welcome as always.
You want to shout out to anything, sir?
Just that, dear cinema owners everywhere, it's called soundproofing, and you should put more of it between your theaters.
Ooh, ouch.
Especially for this. We saw the Dolby. We were in the Dolby theater for this one, so... but yeah, I could definitely see it, especially for this.
I was in a regular theater and I heard special effects coming from my right directly through the entire movie.
We almost went to go see this in IMAX. I wish I kind of did.
Still can. I know.
IMAX 3D.
Wow. Freddy in 3D.
Not the teeth in
3D. No. It's like Jaws 3D all over again. No.
Wow, the gay just comes right at you.
It usually does around me.
Oh, that's a good point. Alex, thank you, sir.
Oh, yeah, thanks for bringing it to me, man. I appreciate it. No, it's always a pleasure. You know, I love talking movies, you guys.
No, anything you got to shout out about, sir?
Actually, there is a brilliant artist by the name of Peter Hollins who does a lot of acoustic work. And just released a Queen melody with over 16 different Queen tracks all in one song. So if you want to check it out, it's on YouTube. And if you're a fan of Queen, watch that. And then, of course, watch the Live Aid stuff because that's amazing.
That's cool. And Mr. Mike, we made it through another one, my friend.
We did. And as always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about?
Yeah, I over the weekend I did hang out in another part of the station on the ESO network with the with Joe and Tony of the Watch Along of Rassilon and actually Nathan Laws from the 42 cast. The four of us had a lot of fun talking all about the Talons of Wang Chang. It's one of my favorites. I know it's one of your favorite Doctor Who adventures too. So that should be released pretty soon. So look for that.
I can't wait to hear it. It's actually, that was the very first episode of Doctor Who I had ever seen.
And it's a good way to start it. It went all downhill from there.
Exactly. Okay. All right. I'm not disagreeing. So. So very cool. And of course, my shout out real quick. I actually finally got around to watching a TV show I've been wanting to see for quite some time. Had a lot of people telling about it, and William has been wanting me to watch the show. It's called Adam Ruins Everything. And it's brainless fun, but you learn something from it. And it's on True TV, and I think season one is up on Netflix. So we were able to cruise through that fairly easily over the weekend. And it's just fun. And, you know, like they used to say on that Fat Albert show with that guy who we don't talk about anymore, you might be careful because you might learn something. Mm. And Adam is awesome about it. And he's just a lot of fun and different topics each week. And, you know, just check it out. Highly recommend. All right. That's going to wrap up our episode for this week. And we're going to be talking a little bit more music next week when we do our music spotlight. And we are going to be looking at U2 next week. So should be interesting going from Queen to U2. Two Live Aid connections right there. Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So should be a lot of fun. So we will be back again next time. Thanks for listening. My name is Mike Faber, and we will talk to you next time on the Interstitial One Podcast. Peace. And we're done.
Woohoo!
Woo! Boom. There we go. You've been listening to the Interstitial One Podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Interstitial One is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 Podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.